Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour with Paul Sadek and Corey Regan starts now.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour, presented on Relevant Radio by Stinson Electric, your trusted electrical advisor, solving electrical problems for commercial, industrial, and institutional facility managers. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan.
Are you staying warm?
I am. It's okay. You know, as long as you're not out in it for too long, you can survive.
10 seconds or
right,
so.
Right. My hair was wet this morning and walking out to my car and it got crispy and frozen
real
quick.
Very crispy. Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, coming up on the Rediscover Hour, we have a very special No Ordinary Conversation. Don't miss Archbishop Nienstedt's wide-ranging discussion with our next auxiliary bishop, the most Reverend Andrew Cousins.
And we'll speak with a woman from Minnesota who's working to save children from the streets halfway around the world.
Plus, a preview of Christmas at the Monastery. Find out how you can support the work of local religious sisters while enjoying some fun festivities.
And we'll hear from local Catholics about the religious sister or brother who had a big impact on their life. There's a special second collection coming up at Masses this weekend to help retired religious.
But first, we'll start the show today like we usually do with Joe Towalski, editor of the Catholic Spirit. Hello, Joe.
Good morning, Corey. Good morning, Paul.
And you are doing, about as well as we are, I take it.
That's right. Trying to stay warm here.
Yeah.
but a happy St. Nicholas Day.
Yes.
That's right. St. Nicholas of Myra.
That's right. Do you have any special traditions to mark the day, or did you when you were growing up?
We didn't. Did you, Corey?
No, I wasn't Catholic then, but we didn't really do the St. Nicholas things.
But St. Nicholas, you know, he was, in many ways, the model for Santa Claus. He was known for secret gift giving.
That's right. And, last year I did an interview with an author who wrote about the real St. Nicholas, and it was very, very interesting. And, we have some of those traditions in our house. We still, to this day, kind of put out the shoes
right
over the evening and, have a few little small gifts in there.
We did that
so, yeah,
with our kids now. Yeah, it's fun.
Great tradition.
Well, the Catholic Spirit is out, and you've got a big, important issue.
Right. Yesterday, the Archdiocese, of course, made some big news when it released information related to priests who have been credibly accused of sexual abuse of minors in the Archdiocese. And the names of the priests and other information are printed in this week's issue of the Catholic Spirit and on a special page of the Archdiocesan website. The information that was released is mostly related to reported incidents that occurred between the mid-1950s and the 1980s, and all of the men have been permanently removed from ministry or they're deceased. And the release is part of the Archdiocese's ongoing effort to be transparent and try to restore trust and help victims to heal and help promote healing throughout the Archdiocese. And the Archbishop said the disclosures this week aren't intended necessarily to be the final ones, that there's a comprehensive review of clergy files going on right now, and the disclosure list will be updated as needed. So we all need to pray for the healing that the Archbishop talks about.
Amen to that. Something new on Net Ministries.
Yeah, Net Ministries recently launched its Igniting Faith initiative, which is an effort that will result in adding more retreat teams and opening two regional offices outside of Minnesota.
And where are those going to be?
Well, they're going to be in Cincinnati and in California.
Okay.
And, they're planning to add a team each year for the next 5 years, bringing the total, I think, to 16 teams that do retreats for youth. So instead of reaching maybe 60,000 junior and senior high teens each year, which is an impressive number, they'll be reaching somewhere upwards of 90,000 in the next several years. And those two regional offices will give them more outreach opportunities and also perhaps an ability to do some additional fundraising and recruiting. And it's just great news because we all know how effective Net is at what it does, and we see the fruits right here in our Archdiocese with the teams that work locally, with the local people who serve on retreat teams around the country, and things like the Lifeline Masses at Net Center. And I think after a teen has a net experience, the statistic is something like 80% of them stay connected to the church somehow. And in today's culture, we as a church sometimes have to work harder than ever to keep youth engaged and in the fold when there's so much in the secular world, you know, competing for their attention. And NET is able to do that so effectively. But they still need to raise some funds, and we need to keep them in our prayers that happens, and perhaps help provide a little bit of that funding ourselves. And if listeners are interested in finding out more about this Igniting Faith initiative, they can go to the NET website at netusa.org.
Isn't our new auxiliary bishop a former NETer?
He is. He is. And I think they will be well represented there at the ordination mass come Monday.
Oh, sure. Good. And what about Rediscover?
Yeah, the focus of the section this week is, not surprisingly, Advent. And let me ask again, Paul and Corey, do you have any special activities you do every Advent to enter more deeply into the season? Maybe praying around an Advent wreath or opening doors on an Advent calendar?
We do the Advent calendar.
Yeah.
We try to get a wreath going.
Mm-hmm. And, well, our story this week focuses on one of those kinds of activities, but it's the Jesse tree.
Oh, yes.
And for folks that might not be familiar with it, it's kind of the family tree of Jesus. Jesse was King David's father, and the Jesse tree focuses on people from the beginning, from Adam and Eve through Abraham and Moses and Jesse and David through some of the prophets, and then up to Mary and Joseph. And for each of those figures, you make an ornament that's symbolic of that person, and you hang it on a tree, the Jesse tree.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ritualize that activity by telling a short story about the person, or, you know, reading a passage from Scripture, or maybe singing a hymn, and then you place the ornament on the tree. And Ann Neuberger, who's a local Catholic author, has written an activity book for parents and children called Meeting Jesus Through the Jesse Tree.
Perfect.
And we interviewed her for the story, and she talks about how this can be another Advent tradition. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of time, which is good for families with mm-hmm. busy schedules at this time of year. But you can still learn a lot about these people from Scripture and how they all point toward Jesus. And so the book features stories and ideas for making different kinds of Jesse trees and ornaments. And
is the Jesse tree a fairly recent practice?
I don't know, but I don't think it's as well known
Common, right.
As some of these other traditions. And, you know, it's just a great way to enter more deeply into the season, I think. And if you haven't started it, you know, it starts with the first Sunday of Advent usually, but if you haven't started it yet, it's not too late.
Can make up.
You can really adapt this, you know, to your schedules, you know, and which maybe persons you want to kind of focus on through the season and do the ornaments. And there's still plenty of time of Advent left to do that, certainly.
And where do you get this book?
You know, you can go to, like, St. Patrick's Guild, I know, makes them available,
okay.
I believe, but you can certainly just search for it online. It's Meeting Jesus Through the Jesse Tree, and there are probably a variety of ways you can order that.
Find it. All right, great.
Seven Sisters, this sounds like a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you know, despite that news that came out yesterday, all of us, you know, who are involved in parish life know that 99% of our priests are they're good, holy men who serve the church with honor. But even so, they still need our prayers. And we have a story this week about an apostolate called Seven Sisters. And it's with hundreds of women around the Twin Cities and around the country who pray a holy hour on a particular day of the week for their pastor or another priest or their bishop. And so, you know, each priest has these seven people. Each has a particular day of the week they pray the holy hour. And this was started by a woman at the Cathedral of St. Paul, and it's spread across the archdiocese and beyond. And the woman, Janet Howe, says that it can really give a person kind of a big picture on parish life and all of the responsibilities and challenges that priests face when you're praying for them. And she describes it as assisting and holding up the arms of the priest as he carries out his vocation in the life of the church. I really like that imagery that she uses. So this is certainly something that other folks can participate in, and people can read more about the Seven Sisters Apostolate on in this week's edition.
Great.
Bishop Paul Serba. Paul Serba
yes.
is the nephew of Bishop
Serba.
You're
right. It can be a little confusing.
Yeah. There's an interesting story here.
Yeah, there's a story about a wood carver. Yes, his name's Paul Serba, and yes, he is the nephew of Bishop Paul Serba of Duluth, and who's also a priest of our archdiocese. And Paul Serba, the nephew, is creating a crozier for Bishop-elect Cousin's ordination next Monday. And it's just a beautiful piece he's creating, and you can see pictures of it in this week's paper. It's got the Bishop Cousin's coat of arms carved into the crook, and Paul Bill's mother does cabinetry and introduced him to wood carving when he was a teenager, and you know, he eventually served an apprenticeship and now does this work full-time. And he really feels a calling to work on religious objects and objects for priests, and this is just one great example of his work. So, you know, people can get a closer look at what that's going to look like, which, of course, is a symbol of the office of the bishop. And speaking about Bishop Cousins, one last reminder, of course, the ordination Monday at 2 o'clock at the cathedral, and everyone is invited. And as we've said before, if you're going to go, get there early. The seating will fill up fast. There'll be
in the parking, right?
Right. There'll be some parking options in a couple other lots. There'll be shuttle buses going around to get you from the cathedral to the reception at the Crown Plaza and back. And, of course, if you can't make it, you can watch it live streamed on the Archdiocesan website or listen to a live broadcast live with you, Paul, on Relevant Radio and via online streaming on relevantradio.com.
Right? And on cable channel 6 also.
That's right. So there are many ways to
Lots of opportunities.
Now, you can find out more about the parking situation on the Archdiocesan website or something?
Yes, and it's the Minnesota History Center lot and the St. Paul College lot. It's, I believe, $5 to park there, and there'll be shuttle buses to get you up to the cathedral.
Hey, we have about a minute. What's the latest on the poster contest?
Well, you know, they're coming in. I'm glad you mentioned that. The deadline is coming up fast, December 11th. So
Wednesday.
That's right. So this weekend, you know, it's cold outside, so you can't maybe do too many outside activities. It's a good time for some of the youth maybe to focus in on doing some of the posters, or if parents are looking for some activities for their kids this weekend, encourage them to do that. They can find out the rules and kind of the specs for everything that they need to do on the back page of this week's paper.
Are you seeing some inspiring entries?
You know, we always do. You know, certainly there's the ones that are just beautiful visually, but sometimes, you know, when the kids are filling in
the sentence,
the phrase, they come up with, you know, I unwrap the real gift of Christmas one, and sometimes maybe the art isn't so fabulous necessarily, but the sentiment
but the
is
answer?
So beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
It's really inspiring, I think, for me to see them all at this time of year. It's really a way I can enter a little more deeply in the Advent season, because I just see what, you know, there's some of these great insights that young kids have about it.
Kids' perspective is always interesting and sometimes can change your heart.
The December 5th issue of The Catholic Spirit is out?
It is.
We will take a look at it, and we'll see you next week, Joe.
Yeah, have a great weekend.
You
stay
too.
Warm.
Okay, you too.
You can hear Joe Towalski, editor of The Catholic Spirit, every week here on the Rediscover Hour. And you can find The Catholic Spirit online anytime at thecatholicspirit.com.
And coming up on the Rediscover Hour, if you're listening on Friday, today is St. Nicholas Day. Find out about the true story of this inspiring man.
And in answering the call, an amazing leap of faith sends a Minnesota woman to the slums of Zambia to answer God's call.
Plus, Archbishop Nienstedt speaks with Bishop-elect Cousins in a very special No Ordinary Conversation when we come right back.
Rediscover.
The Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio is presented each week by Stinson Electric.
This is Paul Archambault of Stinson Electric. We're proud to sponsor the Rediscover Hour. Stinson Electric is a trusted supplier of electrical services in the Twin Cities area.
Stinson Electric solves electrical problems for commercial, industrial, and institutional facility managers.
My customers really appreciate the electricians that I send out there. Their professionalism, their personality, their responsibility, the fact that they can call and get someone out there that knows how to solve the problem, does it in a timely manner, and is neat, tidy, polite as they do it. I get a lot of feedback about the employees.
It's rare to find a company so dedicated to doing business the right way, so that everyone benefits.
We'd like to be your trusted electrical advisor. I'd be happy to meet with you and discuss your electrical needs. I can be reached at 612-424-7382 or on the web at StinsonElectricInc.com.
Everything is all right, everything is so bright. Yeah, the sun is shining beautiful.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan. In today's No Ordinary Conversation, Archbishop Nynstedt discusses all things Episcopal with Bishop-elect Andrew Cousins.
This is Archbishop Nynstedt speaking. I'm in the presence with Bishop-elect Andrew Cousins. And I thought, Bishop, I would just kind of relate for the people listening to this interview how this all happened. I was at the ordination for three new auxiliary bishops in Detroit, and I asked Archbishop Vigneron afterwards, how did he possibly get three? You know, we only have one in St. Paul, Minneapolis. And he indicated to me that he had expressed to the Holy See the fact that they had over 250,000 Hispanics in their archdiocese. Well, I came back and to my office, and in March of 2011, lo and behold, the census came out indicating that the Hispanic population in this state had risen by almost 75% over the past 10 years, and that there were indeed over 250,000 Hispanics, men, most of whom would be Catholic. So on June 27th, 2011, I wrote to the nuncio, who represents the Holy Father here in Washington, D.C., and included this information from the census. And he wrote back on the 20th of July, I believe, indicating that indeed we did have a serious pastoral problem here and that I should write directly to the Holy Father. So that's what I did. And I wrote him in, I think, August of 2011. And then I sat and waited and waited and waited until the 1st of October. And that's when you received your call. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that call?
Yeah. So many people have asked me, did I expect to get this call? And I say, well, you never expect when you wake up in the morning that the Holy Father is going to call you and ask you to be a bishop. You don't expect that that call is going to come today, you know? So I certainly did catch me by surprise. I got a voicemail at about 3 o'clock, and I noticed on my cell phone it was a Washington, D.C. number, but I thought, oh, that's one of my friends who's in Washington, who's a priest out there. And so I let it go to my voicemail, and it wasn't until about 40 minutes later I got to check my voicemail, and much to my surprise, I heard the secretary of the Apostolic Nuncio, and she said, this is Sister Mary Joanna and Father Andrew Cousins. His Excellency Archbishop Vigano would like to speak with you as soon as possible. So my heart began to beat about 100 miles an hour, and I tried to think of other reasons why the nuncio might want to speak to me, but I couldn't. So I immediately called him back, and they put me right through to him, and he was very direct. He just said, our Holy Father, Pope Francis, has nominated you to be an auxiliary bishop of St. Paul, Minneapolis. Do you accept? And, you know, you sort of see your whole life flash before your eyes in a moment like that. But I knew that it was the Lord calling, and so I said, I accept. I did then ask him if I could speak with my spiritual director about it. And he said, do you want to ask before speak before you accept? I said, no, I know that he's going to tell me to accept, but I just would be able to like to process it with him under these days of papal secrecy, to which he gave me permission to speak only to him. And then he said he was going to call you, Archbishop, and inform you. And then, you know, shortly later, you called me back, and that was also a surprise. The phone rang, and I saw that it was you, and then I said, hello, Archbishop, and you said, hello, Your Excellency. and you acknowledged that you asked me how I was doing, and I said, you know, I'm trembling a little bit. But then you were just very kind in encouraging me, and so I was really grateful for that moment. And basically, within about 15 minutes, we had the ordination day potentially set and everything. So it was a life-changing 15 minutes for me, to say the least.
Well, I'm glad you survived it.
Yes.
And continue to survive it. Obviously, the listeners would want to know that you're going to be involved in our Hispanic ministry. We have a vicar for Hispanic affairs, Father Kevin Kinney, who does a great job. And he's got a good team that he works with, but you'll be able to work with them and help them out.
Yes, I'm looking very much forward to that. I did 2 years of full-time Hispanic ministry, or at least part-time. It was a big part of my assignment when I was in Faribault from 2000 to 2002. And I've always had a love for the Hispanic people and their great devotion and their great fire and zeal for the faith. So I'm very much looking forward to working with them.
That's great. And then, of course, the role of any bishop is to teach, to govern, and to sanctify. And you come with tremendous gifts. You've been a teacher at our seminary now for several years. You've been an adept administrator, being in parish life and also vice rector of the seminary. And you're a man of deep prayer. So I'm sure that you will be sharing that with us on all levels.
Yeah, I really just look forward to being out with the people of the Archdiocese. Already it's been so overwhelming how many good people there are in the Archdiocese and how encouraging they've been to me. Just even the next day after the announcement at the Rediscover event, so many people lined up to offer me their prayers and support. And everywhere I go, I'm just so encouraged by the deep faith of our people. And so whatever I can do to help strengthen that faith, to help guide that as a shepherd, I'm very much looking forward to.
Well, I was impressed, too, that when you were interviewed by the Catholic Spirit, you indicated that you wanted to be a source of healing for the community. And I was very touched by that.
Yeah. Actually, I've been... It's one of the things I've reflected on in my own study of the Sacrament of Holy Orders is just Jesus' healing mission. I think sometimes you could see Jesus' whole mission is really a mission of healing. He wants to heal the world. And, of course, a big part of that is conversion from sin, and healing always happens in the truth of who the human person is. And so we have to learn about the truth of who the human person is. But I think it's a beautiful way to speak about and understand how Jesus wants to draw near us. He wants to heal us. He wants to make us whole. And so as part of my own ministry and through the sacraments especially, to continue that healing mission of Jesus is very inspiring to me.
And of course, the emphasis in the church today on the divine mercy and how important that is for us to pay attention to that, that Christ really does heal from within.
Yes, yeah. And that mercy is something that we all need so much. And it's such a deeply healing thing when we're able to open our hearts to receive it.
Mm-hmm. Bishop, would you like to tell us about what you're looking forward to on the 9th of December?
Yeah, it's beautiful for me to be ordained on Our Lady's Feast Day. I experienced often in my life, and especially in these days, the closeness of Mary, that maternal protection and care. And so the thought of being ordained on her feast day is a beautiful inspiration. And also in preparation, I've been reading John Paul II's reflection on becoming a bishop. He wrote that book, Rise, Let Us Be On Our Way. And
yes. He
beautifully goes through the rite there and reflects on the various aspects, you know, the meaning of the ring and being espoused to the local church and laying down one's life for the church, the meaning of the mitre and what it means to stand in the person of Christ and let your light shine before the world, you know, which is always, of course, the light of Christ. And so I'm looking forward to the ceremony and all the people who will come to pray with me through that, knowing that the goal, of course, is that I might be more and more conformed to Jesus in this new ministry.
Mm-hmm. I remember my own ordination very well, and I think the most touching moment for me was the prostration when I was ordained with Archbishop Vigneron. And the two of us, at one point, we lie face down on the floor of the sanctuary, and the Litany of the Saints is prayed over us. Mm-hmm. And I was just overcome with emotion in that gesture, because I thought of all my human frailty, my own sinfulness, and who was I to be called to succeed the apostles. And that's been an ongoing reflection over and over again, the goodness of God's grace and the mercy of his love is really one of the most touching things of our Catholic faith.
It is, it becomes clear, especially in these days of preparation, when you're preparing for ordination like this, that it's something I could never do on my own strength. Who of us could possibly make Jesus present and be part of this foundation of our church by our own strength? And so it's such a great source of confidence that it's really Jesus who does it through us, you know, and he works even through our weaknesses. He does it through us, you know. I read this homily by St. Leo the Great. It's in the Common of Pastors in the Liturgy of the Hours just last week, and he said, the good shepherd himself is the inexhaustible source of strength for every human shepherd.
Mm. It's beautiful. Well, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
I look forward to working with you in this new capacity in this new role that you have in the church.
Thank you, and thank you, Archbishop, for the confidence you've shown in me and the great warm welcome that you've given me.
Well, I'm so looking forward to seeing that ordination. I've never witnessed one, so I'm not really sure what to expect.
It's something to witness.
I'm sure it's no powerful, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and it will be at the Cathedral of St. Paul on Monday, and of course, arrive early.
Right, that's what they keep
saying. If you're going.
I think a lot of people want to witness that and be there.
Yep.
Well, we hear from Archbishop Nienstedt regularly here on the Rediscover Hour in No Ordinary Conversation, and next week we'll be speaking live with Archbishop Nienstedt on the show.
Next up, on December 13th, we'll have Bishop Cousins' remarks from his ordination Monday. Here's some information about the ordination, to which all the faithful are warmly invited. It takes place Monday, December 9th, 2 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul. Be aware, seating and on-site parking are limited. See our show page for off-site parking options. Reception will immediately follow the ceremony at the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown St. Paul. All the faithful are invited to that as well. We want to remind you that you can hear the ordination mass live right here on Relevant Radio 1330, Monday afternoon at 2.
December 6th is the Feast of St. Nicholas, a wonderful time to help your family focus on giving and generosity.
We can all slip into the intense commercialism that surrounds this season, but St. Nicholas expert Adam English, an associate professor of theology and philosophy at Campbell University in North Carolina, says the life of St. Nicholas can be a model for refocusing on the real meaning of the season.
And Joe Towalski interviewed English when his new book, The Saint Who Would Be Santa Claus, The True Life and Trials of Nicholas of Myra, hit store shelves, and here's an excerpt from that interview.
I assume when you were growing up, perhaps your ideas of St. Nicholas were like a lot of other kids' ideas about St. Nicholas, and that would be Santa Claus?
Yes. I grew up in a Christian home. My parents had misgivings about Santa Claus. They wanted to reinforce that Jesus is the reason for the season. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they also wanted us to experience, the joys of Christmas morning. And so they really struggled with how to balance those two things. Christmas Eve, we would read The Night Before Christmas and the biblical story from Luke, which probably is another reason I became interested in St. Nicholas, because, I really see that the historical person of St. Nicholas gives us a way, as Christians, to reconcile these two seemingly incompatible things, Santa Claus and the birth of our Savior. Here you have St. Nicholas, a Christian pastor, a bishop, who models for us Christian charity and Christian virtue.
If we thought of Santa Claus more in the light of St. Nicholas, and, if he were maybe modeled a little more after the real St. Nicholas, how might that change our approach to the Christmas season?
I think that it would broaden it in so many ways, because part of what St. Nicholas challenges us to do is expand our scope for Christmas. If all you do is Santa Claus, it's a purely domestic sort of celebration. It's centered around the hearth and home and warm family memories. And again, I have nothing against that at all. But to bring Santa Claus into the tradition, he's going to challenge you to move outside of your own home, to involve your community, to give, beyond your own immediate family. So I think it could challenge us to do something like, it's even something as simple you could do with your kids, like bake a batch of cookies and, leave cookies for your neighbors, or, bag up a bag of groceries and leave them anonymously on the doorstep of someone who needs them. If you have the resources to go into Walmart and pay off someone's layaway bill, as we hear of some people doing. I think that's really the challenge that Nicholas gives us, is to say, your giving has to be more than to the people you love.
You see, more than just the gift giver when we kind of look at, early Christian history.
Right. He lived at a very transitional moment, maybe the most crucial moment in church history. But when he was born, Christianity was an illegal minority religion. When he died, Christianity was a legalized and also a highly favored religion on the ascendancy. So he witnesses these massive changes. He attended probably the most famous, most important council in church history, the Council of Nicaea. I mean, this is where things get a little, difficult as a historian, because he lived through all these things, but he did not seem to necessarily contribute anything of, you know, enormous historical importance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really almost after his death that people begin to notice him for the small things. There is that story, you know, that I spent a good bit of time recounting in the book about how he gives dowry money. There's three young girls who are on the verge of destitution, and he anonymously, you know, in the middle of the night, goes by their windows and tosses in a bag of gold three separate times so that each of them can use it as a dowry to marry.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that act, although really, you know, has no historical importance, you might say. I mean, it's not an empire-shaping kind of event.
Mm-hmm.
But it really grabs the imagination of the people at the time, as it does even for us today. Really demonstrating what does Christian virtue, what does Christian charity actually look like? He doesn't leave us sermon or legislation. He leaves us a witness. And really, that's what people need. And no one is going to take time to read the lengthy expositional sermon. But if you can capture in just a picture, here's what Jesus would do. Here is what Christian charity demands. He does give, for the ordinary Christian, this amazing example of Christian charity and Christian justice.
What a guy, huh?
Well, it's a good reminder about Christian charity, how simple things that you can really do and you can teach your kids to do beyond just giving in your home, but giving to those in need outside of your home.
St. Nicholas, a model of the simple and the extraordinary as well.
Right. And we've put a link to that story Joe wrote after interviewing Professor English on our show page. Just go to rediscover-faith.org and click on radio in the top navigation bar.
And coming up on the Rediscover Hour, we'll hear from a Minnesota native who's giving the gift of hope all year round in the streets of Zambia.
Plus, we'll highlight Christmas at the monastery and other great Catholic events happening around town a little later in the show, and we'll be right back.
The family of Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels and Cremation Services has proudly served the Twin Cities area for five generations. No matter which of the 16 locations you choose, you will always find an exceptional level of professionalism and care to a tribute of life. Washburn McCreevy's traditional approach to these tributes will allow survivors to love, laugh, and live well again, even after their loss. Pre-planning your funeral should be a natural part of life because it provides you with the time to make end-of-life decisions in a calm and rational atmosphere. You live your life to the fullest, knowing your wishes will be honored. Washburn McCreevy even has a pre-planning checklist or online form so that you can start the process with the ultimate privacy. Have one sent to you free by calling 612-377-7841. The family of Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels, Cemeteries, and Cremation Services continues to present the Daily Mass evenings on Relevant Radio. 612-377-7841.
Raise a glass to friendship and knowing.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Corey Regan.
And I'm Paul Sadek. Imagine following a call that leads you from your comfortable Minnesota home to some very tough streets halfway around the world.
Yeah, that's exactly what our next guest did a decade ago. And now 10 years into her ministry with street children in Lusaka, the capital of Zambia, she continues to explore ways to help more children escape the horrors of homeless life in the Southern African nation.
We're honored to be joined today by the founder of Action for Children Zambia, Carol McBrady. Thank you for joining us today, Carol.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Help us out geographically first. Tell us where Zambia is so we can picture it on a globe.
Well, Zambia is about 10,000 miles from Minnesota.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
And it's in the southern part, the sub-Saharan Africa part.
Okay, and
in the middle of the bottom of the country.
And you're in the capital there. Is it Lusaka? Did I pronounce that right?
Yes, you did. It's in. I actually live in Lusaka, Zambia, which is the only urban center in Zambia.
That's got to be a tough area climatologically, I would think.
Well, we don't have 10 below zero.
Well, that's true.
People say that about where we live, I'm sure, too.
Yes, they think we're a little crazy to be
absolutely,
in Minnesota.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about the mission of Action for Children Zambia. What do you do for the children?
Well, what we do is primarily it's the street children. In a lot of impoverished countries in the developing world, there are many children that are begging in the streets or having to live homelessness because there's no one to take care of them. AIDS has kind of wiped out the entire population of parents.
Mm-hmm.
So they've ended up with this explosion of children, young people, some as young as 5 and 6 years old, living in the streets and the markets. On their own, no parents, nothing with them.
Oh,
and what I've been called to do is go into the streets and get to know them. And from there, we've obviously grown. But when I first started, we just did medical crisis care. So if a kid is sick or injured, you know, when your child is sick, they call mom. And
mm-hmm.
these children had nobody. So I became the mom. And so I'm busy taking care of them. And since then, a couple of years after I started, we built Salvation Home, which is a treatment center. Because the child in the streets, I mean, they've lost their parents, they've been abandoned, they've learned to steal, many are drug addicted, there's abuse and sexual trauma beyond anything we can imagine.
Mm.
And so to take this child off the streets was very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so Salvation Home is all set up to restore the child to some sort of humanity, normal life.
Normalcy, yeah.
And then... From there, you know, once they reach that point where they can actually come off the streets and live in the community, we want them back in the community. I'm not a children's village or someplace that's going to build my own home or my own church. Everything we do is community-based. So we have students from the University of Zambia that come in and try to find the families. And if we can, we take the child home back to their families, and then we continue to pay for their education to make sure they don't go back to the streets.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, if they don't, most of them don't. So then we got some land
uh-huh.
from a chief, a tribal chief out there gave us traditional land. And so we've built a farm with the attempt to kind of self-sustain ourselves so that it's not always donor-dependent.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes the permanent homes for the children who don't have families they can go back to.
And they work there and live there? And
yeah, they work there, they live there. What we do is we have houses. So we have right now 4 houses. And in each house is a Zambian family, a mother, father, and their children. And then they take at least 8 of our children from Salvation Home.
Mm.
And then, so they're raised as just a regular family.
Wow.
In the village. So everything we do is geared around the fact that, you know, these children are not going to go to America. They have to learn to live within their own communities successfully.
Well, I have to ask, how did you get involved in this, or how did God lead you to this type of work?
had to be a call.
Well, it's definitely a call. If you're not called, it's way too difficult. You can't really manage to complete it. But it really all started with a trip from my church, and where I went and really kind of looked at, what am I doing here? So, and that's when I first met the street child. And I had spent 25 years as a social worker here first.
Okay.
So this, you know, I was always part of this kind of troubled child, troubled teenager sort of thing in my life,
mm-hmm.
and I volunteered here for some of the projects, Little Earth projects and other things too in Minneapolis. So I kind of thought I knew what poverty would be, and then I got to Zambia and went, we don't have any clue.
Right.
I mean, our children would never have to sleep in a rubbish pile for years,
right.
Maybe a night, but never for years. So that it was really put on my heart that I met the children and their they're much easier to help than the Minnesota child because it's brand new, the street child, and you know, it's just from the AIDS generation having AIDS having taken a generation of people that this has, you know, grown and come a real problem for them. So they were much easier to help. And I'm telling you, those little children, they loved having you. I could pick up a stick and teach the alphabet.
Oh, my gosh.
Whereas, you know, here when you're working with the juvenile delinquents, they're tough. They have guns and, you know, drugs and money and all of those things that the children in Zambia will never have because of poverty.
Tell us a success story.
Oh, you know, we are so blessed. I get to live with the miracles every day. And I have, I think one of my favorite stories I've been telling is I have a young girl that was one of my first ones I put in school when she was 14. And I put her in school because she had been prostituting for money, for food, for her brothers and sisters. She was a child-headed household, and she was, you know, doing her best. So I found her. At that time, I didn't even have a home yet. I was just visiting still. So I found her a place that she could stay and said, if she lives here and I pay for her school, will you keep her? So basically, I paid for her to be kept in a home. And she went to school, and then, of course, she got pregnant at 15 because that was all she knew and was really challenged by the father of the baby that if you don't quit school and stay home, we won't help you. And she chose not to quit school, so she wrote her exams 2 weeks after she had the baby, qualified for grade 10, finished school, and is now married to the father of the baby. And has another child, has their own home, and sells BMWs for a living. And her husband also has a job. And she takes more girls from the streets. If I have kids I can't find places for, she'll take
them.
She
helps them. Wow. Well, real quick, Carol, how can others and listeners help you help these children in Zambia?
Well,
tell us.
You know, basically there's two things we really need. One, of course, is financial support. I can't feed a child anymore. I have no. When I first started, I had my own income from the sale of my house, but now there's nothing. We completely rely on the goodwill and God's calling and faith to get the financial resources to feed our children. And then the other is we love to have volunteers come. So if there's somebody out there that's piqued to do a little street work or even farming, because we go from the streets back to the community, so there's many opportunities for volunteers or groups to come and serve in some way as well.
Carol McBrady of Action for Children Zambia, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
If you're listening on Friday, you can still make it to tonight's Action for Children Zambia benefit. The Dinner and Dance Gala starts at 6 p.m. tonight, Friday, December 6th, at Reichel's Event Center in Annandale. Proceeds from the event pay for housing and educating children rescued from the streets of Lusaka, Zambia. Attendees will find out more about these special efforts at the event. Cost is $50. Call 320-963-3940 for more information and to make your reservations. That's 320-963-3940.
And you can find out more about Carol's ministry and find out how you can help at afczambia.org. That's afczambia.org. And we've set up a link on our show page at rediscover-faith.org. Just click on radio at the top navigation bar.
Every week on the Rediscover Hour, we catch up with local Catholics and ask them about a faith topic.
And this week, we asked them to share a story of a religious brother or sister who had a big impact on their life.
I'm Sister Midge, and I had a high school teacher, Sister Marlene Breimhorst, who was a huge influence in my life. She told me that I was spending way too much time playing instead of studying. And so I took her advice and started to study. She's still living, and she's a dear.
Hi, I'm Ed Driscoll from Assumption Parish in St. Paul. And my grade school years were spent with the BVMs. My high school years were spent with the Christian Brothers. College years with the Christian Brothers. There was a brother, Fabian, who was an enormous influence in my life and kept me on the straight and narrow in those years when boys have to be kept on the straight and narrow.
Hi, I'm Susan from Nativity in St. Paul. The nun that I really liked was Sister Agnes Ward, and she was at St. Kate's, and I transferred in, and she was my Latin teacher, and I really didn't know that I really wanted to take Latin again after my high school experience, but she assured me I should go directly into Latin 2. And it was wonderful. Second semester Latin 2 was sister, and two students, because enrollment had gone off because the seminarians were now going to take Greek over at St. Thomas. So sister just redid the curriculum a little bit, got a coffee pot, and we had class twice a week. Judy brought donuts one day, and I brought donuts the other day. And I did a lot of Latin and really got into St. Kate's.
I'm Meg. I'm from Assumption Parish, and I have a hard time picking a favorite religious because that's like picking a favorite child. There were just so many. But the favorite at the moment is named Sister Midge, because she's reminding me what's important in life, and she's put me on a pathway of trying to help raise funds for the religious.
And if you have an idea for a question you'd like to ask fellow Catholics, please send it to us at the Rediscover Hour at archspm.org. And please prayerfully consider helping retired religious sisters and brothers financially this weekend in a special second collection at Masses for the Retirement Fund for Religious.
Plus, we'll have details on a festive way to help support local religious women. In just a minute, we'll find out about the biggest fundraiser of the year for the local Benedictine Sisters of St. Paul's Monastery when we come right back on the Rediscover Hour.
Rediscover.
Stinson Electric solves electrical problems for commercial, industrial, and institutional facility managers. They strive for the best results for their customers.
This is Paul Archambault of Stinson Electric. This summer, I took a 10-day vacation up at the lake. The first three emails that I opened on Monday morning were all compliments about how well my employees had handled various things while I was gone. What a blessing to come back to that.
Stinson Electric has such a wide set of skills, your electrical needs are always handled by an expert in the field.
Our ideal in our company is to have each person be continuously improving. So we host annual in-house training for our electricians. They're trained in safety, they're trained in new codes, troubleshooting techniques. That way, with a number of employees, we have kind of a wide range of knowledge. People become experts on different parts of the business.
Stinson Electric is the sponsor of the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio. You can contact Paul at 612-424-7382.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Paul Sadek.
And I'm Corey Regan. And we want to remind you about a special Christmas poster contest for children. The Catholic Spirit invites young artists in the Archdiocese to participate in a poster contest with the theme, I Unwrap the Real Gift of Christmas When.
And the completed sentence must appear on the front of an 8.5 by 11 inch poster. Entries will be judged on originality and artistic ability, interpretation of the theme, newspaper reproduction quality.
A first prize of $50 will be awarded for one poster in each category, grades 3 and under, grades 4 through 6, and grades 7 through 9, and grades 10 through 12. So for all the details, please visit the Catholic Spirit website, and we've also posted a link on our show page. Just go to rediscover-faith.org, click on radio in the top navigation bar, and act fast. Entries must be postmarked or dropped off at the Catholic Spirit offices by Wednesday, December 11th.
Are warmly invited to experience the hospitality of the Benedictine Sisters through Christmas at the monastery.
This annual event is the largest fundraiser of the year for the sisters and their local ministries. For more on this heartwarming holiday event, we're joined by Sister Mary White. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us, Sister.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Of course. So tell us, please, what attendees at the Christmas at the Monastery event this Saturday, December 7th, will enjoy that evening and afternoon, I guess, an evening?
Well, at this event, our guests will enjoy Advent Vespers with the sisters in our beautiful chapel.
Wonderful.
They'll be dazzled by delicious hors d'oeuvres and wines, as well as hot and sparkling cider served by our oblates all evening long. They'll be invited to bid on auction items such as an ergonomic sit-stand desk, a dinner on the lake with Sister Paula, an afternoon cruising the St. Croix River with our sisters, tickets to sporting events, as well as beautiful baskets. Of course, they can also buy Sister Joan's Nutribits, which are dog treats for their canine friends.
I remember hearing about those, yes. Tell us about some of the ministries that this event supports.
Okay, let's see. The ministries would be, let me just think so I can, well, can I first tell you about our anniversary?
Oh, sure. Sure. How many years has this been going on?
We've just celebrated our 65th anniversary at the Maplewood. We really moved from St. Benedict's Monastery in St. Joseph, Minnesota in 1948. At that time, there were 178 of us sisters. We taught in 14 schools all over the Twin Cities and kept house for the bishop as well as several priests. We staffed St. Joseph's Home for Children and founded St. Therese Residence in New Hope. We also worked in parishes and retreat centers. These are our ministries. Our main ministry as Benedictines, of course, is praying for people,
for
the church and the world.
Sure.
But also, we need to assist our own aging sisters, as well as many ways in which we serve the church and society. A few of our retired sisters require assistance with their daily life, and proceeds from Christmas at the Monastery supports these needs. Also, through our Benedictine Center, we share our monastic values with the broader community and provide spiritual direction and faith programs. Our Maple Tree Child Care Center provides care for children from 6 weeks to 6 years of age. We continually are inviting lay people to deepen their faith by learning about Benedictine values, values that are applicable to every lifestyle. Some of these people, after a year of study, decide to become oblates of our monastery, and I think you might be aware of our oblate program.
The oblates are kind of like a third order, aren't they?
Well, some communities would call it a third order, or associates. Our collaborative members, yes, the Oblate program is a very old program for Benedictines, and we have over 170 Oblates at this moment, and many of them are very involved in our ministries.
Wonderful. Well, and real quick, what do you personally most look forward to at Christmas at the Monastery?
Well, I guess I look forward to, first of all, I jump into the Advent season with gusto, but also I love seeing the Christmas arriving, the Christmas spirit arriving at the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
The decorations are great, but mainly we sisters like to have a chance to see old friends and new friends. We've had fundraisers for many years at the St. Paul's Monastery, and people come back year after year, but we also like to meet our new friends, and we expect a lot of new friends this year.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Sister, for joining us, and we hope to see you at the event.
Well, I hope you do come, and we're still getting calls, so come to the door whether you've called ahead or not.
Okay.
Or if you want to call ahead, call 777-6850 and let us know you're coming.
Perfect.
It isn't necessary. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Yeah,
Bye.
Thank you. Now, if you're listening on Friday, you can still make plans to get out and enjoy the Benedictine hospitality at Christmas at the Monastery. And like she said, tickets are available at the door.
Here are the details. Christmas at the Monastery takes place Saturday, December 7th, 4 to 7 p.m. at St. Paul's Monastery, 2675 Bennett Road in Maplewood. This is the largest fundraiser of the year for the Benedictine sisters at St. Paul's Monastery and their ministries. This event features music, food, exclusive auction items, and an inspirational prayer service. Cost $35 per person. Register or find out more by calling 651-777-6850. That's 651-777-6850. Again, tickets are available at the door on Saturday, December 7th, 4 to 7 p.m. for $35.
Okay, time now for a quick look at some other Catholic events happening around town. The Episcopal ordination of Andrew Cousins as bishop takes place, like we said, on December 9th at 2 p.m. at the Cathedral of St. Paul. All faithful are invited to attend this important event in the life of our local church. Please do be aware that seating and on-site parking are limited. See the Archdiocese website for off-site parking options. A reception will immediately follow the ceremony at the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown St. Paul, to which all the faithful are invited. And we want to remind you that we will be carrying the ordination live right here on Relevant Radio 1330.
St. Paul's Outreach Men on a Mission presents Stephen Minas, president of Benedictine College, speaking on the importance of living a mission-filled life Friday, December 13th. 7 a.m. at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Bloomington. Come for some faith, food, and fellowship. Hear a speaker who affirms Catholic professionals in our vocations as husbands, fathers, and leaders. To RSVP for President Stephen Minas, visit spoweb.org or call 651-451-6114. That's St. Paul's Outreach Men on a Mission breakfast on Friday, December 13th, 651-451-6414 or spoweb.org. And what's coming up, Corey?
Coming up on the Rediscover Hour, we'll have a special live interview with Archbishop Nienstedt.
And Bishop Cousins is ordained Monday. We'll have our brand new bishop's remarks.
And local college-age Catholics share how they are marking Advent this year and preparing their hearts for Christmas.
The Rediscover Hour brought to you by Stinson Electric. Fridays at 9 a.m., Saturdays at 6, Sundays at 9.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.